you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale.
It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome back to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Lamprey Milt on the show. He's the host of the Mikhail Chat podcast and is, I guess, a researcher and writer. He posts articles on the American Sun. He recently posted this article, China Real Estate and COVID-19. That's going to pretty much be what we'll talk about tonight and go from there. So how are you doing tonight?
Very well. Thank you for having me on. Big ears.
Okay. Thank you. Can you still find that program?
Yep.
Okay. Your program, where can people find that?
Well, you guys can follow us on BitChute now.
Okay.
We got terminated about 4 months ago off of YouTube. Funny thing about YouTube is you can upload videos of yourself waging jihad in Aleppo, but if you criticize Planned Parenthood, you get terminated. So it's MGTOW chat. Follow us on BitChute. Since getting terminated, I started to do a little bit writing. I want to thank the American Sun for letting me use their platform to share some of my writings and stuff. Going forward, I'm going to keep trying to put out some podcasts and streams. It's an uphill battle, but I'm going to keep soldiering through.
Okay, and it's the American Sun, that was started by the folks at the Myth of the 20th Century, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get started. This piece that you wrote, China, Real Estate, and COVID-19, this takes on globalization, China's relation to that. Switching in production, also the switching capital, has affected real estate and the deindustrialization of the West since the 1970s, and how it's affected, you know, the millennial generation and now the Zoomers. So I'll let you take it from there.
Well, about 10 years ago, I started noticing a strange pattern at the local level where I live. In order to build or redevelop a city, you must establish a sewer district. Local planning boards started to set policies for sewer districts in areas that never had one, under the guise of clean drinking water. So I started reading PDFs and got lost in the labyrinth of NGOs and alphabet soups, and this all coincides with my line of work. So I became quite privy to what to look for when it comes to Agenda 21 and its subgroups. I also worked and lived in Asia in the realm of development and became absolutely fascinated with the rapid transformation of China and Southeast Asia. And started jotting down some findings. And now with the ongoing rhetoric about Chinese influence in the West and COVID, I felt compelled to write those articles simply because I haven't found anyone else really covering the subject about EB-5 visas and kind of the inner workings when it comes to sustainable development. When I came back to the United States after living abroad for an extended period, the first thing I noticed was all these massage parlors popping up. You know, at the end of every strip mall, you'll see like the blinds closed and an open sign at like 11 o'clock at night. And I'm like, this is a bit strange. Growing up, you'd have to go to, like, you know, a sleazy part of town to, you know, go to one of these spas, let's say. But now they seem to be popping up everywhere across the United States. And, you know, when I try explaining to the average person what's going on in there, where it's one, it's prostitution, two, it's human trafficking, and three, most of them are illegal immigrants. Most people don't want to discuss it because I'm sure a lot of guys actually go and visit one of them. So I started wondering what happened the past 5 to 10 years, and how did this come about?
So you notice a change in your neighborhood, and you're making connection to these geopolitical economic events that are occurring, and it's affecting, you know, life on the street corner of your neighborhood.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Most people don't want to discuss how mainland Chinese just started buying up properties in neighborhoods that never had people from China in them. Again, most of the Chinese people in the United States tend to live in enclaves right outside urban centers, San Francisco, LA, New York City, what have you. But now I would go to a local diner and I can tell that this person is clearly from the outskirts of Beijing or Shanghai. And it just, I found it to be quite interesting. Like, how did you get here? Don't you feel uncomfortable that you're here? You don't speak English. What has happened? And globalization and the lack of foreign capital controls really took an insular people and spread them across not just North America, but the world. I believe it was Marco Polo who warned of Chinese being a force to reckon with, and if let loose, if they were let loose, and it's best to keep them in check. In Italy, for example, a big reason why it was hit so badly with COVID is Milan, where most of the people had passed away from COVID. The Chinese moved to Milan for working in the garment factories. They were away. They were in China for the new year, and then they went back to Milan to work in the factories because the Italian garment factories felt it was just cheaper to use Chinese labor. So, you know, that's kind of the reason why it spread so rapidly in Italy.
Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing the effect of globalization, this mass transfer of people from one country to another, rather dramatic. And of course, this is a consequence of economic developments. Since the 1970s, we've seen this gradual deindustrialization of the West, Europe, and the United States, and the transfer of that production to cheaper labor markets. Of course, in the case of China, which has been heavily industrialized since the end of the 1980s, this has allowed China, I guess, to amass a large amount of reserves. And so now you're seeing the effect of this as, I guess the Chinese use that money to buy a property abroad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, just brushing up on what I just said about what happened in Italy. When you buy a product that's, Louis Vuitton or Coach pocketbook, it says made in Italy. One would assume that it was made by an Italian when in fact it was made by a Chinese immigrant. It was cheap labor. And in the United States, when you see someone from China who doesn't speak Chinese, they tend to be indentured servants. They have to work off the debt for an extended period for the person that brought them over here. And that's why you see such an explosion of Chinese immigrants on the West Coast and on the East Coast. And then not only that, coinciding with the cheap labor is the fact that China is also investing directly into the developing world, China and Africa, feeding the dragon, as they called it. I've been theorizing that Western multinationals don't want to dirty their hands to shoot themselves in the foot financially when it comes to dealing with the undeveloped world, doing such things as like paving roads, building hospitals, or having to deal with their managing director being decapitated in the Congo over some silly spat. It's just not worth the effort. And all these multinationals have to adhere to UN Sustainable Development Goals. Shell Oil Company has given it a valiant effort in Nigeria the past 20 years, trying to stay within the UN doctrines of sustainability by collaborating with NGOs, donating monies to some global home initiative. But most of it's turned into a failure because of kidnappings, deliberate sabotage by Nigerian activists, and just how multi-ethnic these nations are in Africa. Too many rules, too many regulations, and constant audits from the higher-ups. So basically, why not let China do all the dirty work? If they want to stay years on end spending millions to develop some road in some godforsaken land, so be it. Let them do it. So basically, Western nationals are quite okay with Chinese businessmen going across the earth doing these such things because they don't adhere to any type of human rights doctrine. They don't care about human rights. And we already know that there's a lopsided demographic problem in China where there's too many, there's an excess amount of men versus women. So they send these young guys right fresh out of college to be like modern day pioneers in Angola, send them over there, let them do all their dirty work. And in exchange, Africa gives raw materials and minerals and resources to China in exchange for monies.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's basically letting them go out and try to deal with the mess of the third world. And inevitably, the profits stream back into the Western banks, though.
Correct, yeah. But long term.
Yes.
So I'm talking 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the line. Well, for example, why wouldn't we go over to Africa or Pakistan or parts of Southeast Asia and, basically develop their country, build the roads, do all these type of things? We don't do any of that. Instead, we use the soft power, the silk glove, and, teach them how to put a condom on a banana. Bill Gates, Bono from U2. So we handle the social engineering aspect of things while China lays down the infrastructure and does all the kind of the dirty work.
And there's no real attempt at development economics to improve the situation. It's just total exploitation.
Right, but at the same time, China's neighbors truly do not like China. Vietnam, for example, is a great example, actually, where the U.S. has lifted a 50-year arms embargo and is now helping Vietnam build its first nuclear power plant. Laos, which is just a vassal of Vietnam. Myanmar, always clashing with China over border disputes. And obviously now with India, what's happening in the northern regions. Russia, where it's kind of this the enemy of my enemy is my friend relationship. And even as of late, Cambodia has grown tired of China, and its leader Hun Sen is in his twilight years of ruling the country. So it's really interesting that most of the developed world has nowhere to turn. And they kind of prefer China because it's just business. They're not trying to, indoctrinate them into feminism and global homo. So that's kind of what I've seen transpiring the past 20 years.
But in the meantime, you notice these dramatic changes. An effect of this, of course, is the kind of changes you're noticing like in your neighborhood. Because whenever you bring in migrant labor or indentured servant labor, you're going to have an increase in things like drug use and prostitution. It's almost like what happened in the 19th century with China when they were brought in, the coolies were brought in to build the railroads.
Yeah, same exact thing. That's a good point. It's very similar to that. Basically, China and the Chinese people, they possess a limited time horizon. What I mean by that is they live in the constant present. They can't see past and they can't see forward, so they don't really care about the environment. They don't care about pollution, things like that. Prostitution is really not that big of a deal to them, where us in the West, our Christian ethos, we kind of frown upon these type of things. And again, the human trafficking is a major aspect of all this, where again, human life is relatively cheap to them.
Yeah, in China right now, you've seen a good example is the rapid industrialization that's occurred over the past few decades without any concern for the environment. You know, we have the this might have contributed to the COVID-19 operation, because they blamed a lot of the there were reports of a lot of people with respiratory illness in China, and of course in the Wuhan area district, and that area has horrible air because they've had this synergy of sort of old style industrial production and new style production of modern technology, and this synergy has produced a very foul environment, and this of course produces respiratory problems. I think 300,000 people a year die from pneumonia in China, and millions have it. Yet all of a sudden there's reports of respiratory illnesses in China, and they blame it on a new virus without any reliable diagnostics being performed, by the way.
It's very hard to get that type of data out of China. I mean, getting any type of information that's correct out of China is quite difficult. I mean, Donald Trump, kind of mentioned it in his debate last night. For example, 1/10 of cooking oil in China is gutter oil, where they take just oil from motors and sewage and reused cooking oil, and they just refine it and reuse it, and people eat that stuff. It's quite disgusting. These type of concepts are quite alien to us. I think it was recently, not maybe a couple of years ago, if you recall, there was a huge scandal regarding baby formula, mm-hmm. where they're putting some type of chemical in baby formula and selling it back to the United States. Again, these ideas, we can't fathom them here in the West, and it's so foreign to us and alien that people would actually go about and, taking oil from the street and using it to cook fried rice or fried noodles with.
This relationship with China, of course, was established back in the 1970s when Henry Kissinger struck this deal. This was all part of the creation of the, OPEC and the petrodollar. And inevitably, what was going to happen was with the petrodollar, and you'd have the gradual deindustrialization of the West and its export of its productive capacity. And after the 1980s, we decided to go into China, and so the oligarchs, if you will, made that decision to do this. And so, at some point, was this is this part of an overall plan, or just something that's happening?
Well, one has to take a bit of a kaleidoscopic view when it comes to looking at China's rise, for that matter. A lot of people do point to the Kissinger-Nixon doctrine. But it is quite fascinating, the rise in China. If anyone knows the kind of the mudsill of sustainable development and Agenda 21, it's to bring up the underdeveloped countries and bring down mm-hmm. the ones that are already industrialized. So we've seen this swift move the past 20, 30 years. Again, NAFTA, the outsourcing of jobs and what have you. This kind of all coincides that, okay, we're bringing down our living standards so China can, be pulled up, where now every Chinese person gets an air conditioner and a modern cell phone with all, rare earth minerals and what have you. And the Chinese have this affinity for Western consumption. So now they want to have the same living standards as the average American. Well, you could do that, but already the Chinese middle class outnumbers the American middle class, and we can't put that much strain on Earth's resources. So as we can see what's happening with post-COVID, China really has not slowed down. You can look at their stock market. It's also doing fairly well, and there's many videos and pictures and what have you coming out of China where things seem to be quite normal and no one's really wearing the mask and it's business as usual, while we're talking about a second lockdown here in the United States.
Yeah, and that's could be the one of the functions of the COVID operation was to, manage or to implement this economic reset or repositioning under the guise of a global pandemic. because you shut down the economy, you shut down all production in the West, or most production in the West, and then you keep it suppressed for an extended period of time, you achieve that objective. And yet you don't get blamed for it, because it's you can blame it on a virus or God or whatever. This is why you've had such a sort of a reaction in the West to this stuff, and we're stuck with sort of with the cognitive dissonance, if you will, of it not being really that bad, yet the government's panicking. And you see this in Australia, New Zealand, Europe, and UK and the United States. And then you take that into account of the goals and objectives of Agenda 21, 2030, and also the World Economic Forum's Great Reset. And the evidence that this thing was sort of game tabletop exercise and planned, you know, in late 2019 with the Gates Network, with Johns Hopkins and the Imperial College of London, and working with the various governments throughout the world to implement this thing. And you know, there is evidence of collusion here, strong evidence of collusion of this whole thing being
right.
Orchestrated.
I believe you were mentioning that the lab in Wuhan was built by American scientist.
That was that's Anthony Fauci was involved in that. So this gain of function research into the virus. Now even today, this you look at the CDC. If you look at their official numbers on the lethality of the virus, but you know, between ages like 1 and 21, it's like 99.976. Goes down to 21 to 40, it's like 99.75, and then really it only gets down to like 96 to people over the age of 75. So it's no unique threat to humanity. It's been used as a justification for all these harsh lockdowns, and of course the implementation of a China style social credit system, technocratic panopticon situation where they want to monitor everybody, and they're intermingling contract tracing programs. This is all under the guise of controlling a pandemic, which really never was, because it's a spurious claim of a pandemic anyway, because it's, what standards do you have to declare a pandemic? You know, a case in every country? I mean, it's got, at this point, it's kind of laughable, yet these policies persist. And of course, New York's been devastated by it, but not devastated by the virus, just devastated by the lockdown.
Yeah, you know, building upon what you just stated, two things. One is, we already know that the climate hysteria was not working in the United States. I mean, the Thunderbird, little autistic girl, you know, saying you're all going to die if you don't listen. And, you know, that was last year. And you know, even the Pope got involved, you know, with saying climate change is a threat to humanity. And then also the countries, Australia, the United States, New Zealand, maybe not so much New Zealand, they all have a large Chinese presence and influence as far as foreign direct investment. Australia supplies China with most of its meat, beef, and lamb. And you can see that Australia is kind of mimicking the communist party's military policy, policing policy, where they just go into someone's house because they posted something nasty on Facebook. And the United States, where we're walking around wearing masks as if we are Chinese. So it's like a big laugh on the West that we're being punked by China, more or less.
Yeah, and despite the fact that it's just, there's no effect, there's no scientific evidence or to show that wearing a mask is effective. In fact, if anything, it suggests that it's bad for you, because it inhibits breathing. You don't get enough oxygen intake, and you breathe what you should be exhaling, and that actually causes illness itself, because that mask itself will collect bacteria. And you have people who are out exercising with masks on. You know, it's absurd. Again, over what? You look at the numbers, it's just nothing really there to be remarkably alarmed about from a public health standpoint. But again, the public health concern is being used. And one thing you see with when you investigate someone like Bill Gates and his foundation, is that he's networked or very influential with the World Health Organization. He's their biggest single donor. And he's the one that installed Tedros, the current Secretary General of the World Health Organization. Tedros worked for his foundation before that. And he's tied into Johns Hopkins. So you see this link between the medical establishment and high finance, and also Bill Gates and his, you know, and his network, and the objectives he has, you know, and of course, then again, you have this thing where the oligarchs, like the Rockefellers, and the later the Gates, they've always had a certain affinity or an attraction toward the Chinese model. And lo and behold, and they're imposing it.
The UN has stated that numerous times, how we should follow China, the way they get things done, the way they build cities, the way they're able to implement certain policies with just a snap of the finger.
Yeah, isn't that great? No, messy politics and things like that, you know.
Many university professors adore China. I listened to a few Marxist professors just to try to get a balance and see what the whole left establishment and what it is they're regurgitating out into the airwaves. And I listened to them, and they adore China. Like, they just love it. Similar to how someone like Bernie Sanders went to the Soviet Union for his honeymoon. It's the same type of, how they just love this type of centralized power. They think it's just the way you should get things done.
Yeah, you can admire China from your big house in Vermont.
Right, exactly.
And goes it was David Rockefeller's brother, who way back in 1973 penned an article, I think, in the New York Times, Letters from a China Traveler, where he's praising Mao and what he achieved. And this is 1973, so this is at the tail end of the Cultural Revolution. I think the long-term plan of China at that point was they needed someone like Mao to disrupt it, to destroy traditional China, to set it up for its development, its industrialization, a couple decades later.
Well, digressing for a moment by what you just said about Mao, China lacks a culture. The China that you see today is not the China from the Wing dynasties, and when you see all these beautiful temples, Buddhist temples, and what have you. That's not China today. What you have today is kind of like a quasi capitalist with major social controls. So what China has been doing is they tend to copycat and mimic Western consumption and Western architecture. So if you go to certain cities and regions in China, you're going to start seeing cathedrals, and they build financial districts. One of them happens to be a carbon copy of Manhattan's Wall Street. Because they don't have their own culture, they are kind of like trying to be like us, and it's very cringe, it's very creepy. And when they come to the United States or come to Canada, they the first thing they do is buy up properties in the areas that they heard so much about as a showpiece, as a status symbol. So for Vancouver, it's Richmond. So they hear the word Richmond, they think it's a rich man. And in New York, it's Whitestone. So they think it's like, ooh, it's something fancy. Again, this is kind of a bit of a decadent trash culture. Sorry to say something like that, but it's the truth, where they'll drive BMWs, buy Louis Vuitton bags, take selfies at, St. Patrick's Cathedral. This is what they do without really understanding the context behind these things.
That was kind of the stereotype you had for Japanese in the 1960s.
Oh, see, I don't know anything about that.
The idea of the Japanese tourists snapping pictures everywhere. Because mm-hmm. they were enjoying the post-war prosperity that was coming into form in the 1960s, and you've had the development of post-war Japanese culture, which is of course very different than the pre-war Japanese culture, because it had been smashed, during the war by the Americans and MacArthur going in there, and this new Japanese culture developed. People who know more about Japanese culture will probably offer more about that. But yeah, there's sort of this, the J-pop and K-pop thing in Korea and mm-hmm. in Japan, and so a lot of what you see in Japan now. Modern Japan is nowhere near traditional Japan. It's just sort of this mixture, this fusion, corrupted fusion
Right, they have Disney World.
Yeah,
they'll have Disney. Yeah.
The East Asians have always had an ability for imitative absorption, and so they're good
cargo at cargo culture.
Yeah, they're very good at, you know, they can take the idea of an automobile and make a very good automobile, a good reliable automobile, the Honda, the Toyota, the other gadgetries that they produce and export. But this was all set. I mean, this goes back to the 1970s when America became, you had the closing of the gold window in 1971 with Nixon, the ending of the Bretton Woods system. And so then you had the free floating dollar, and then Kissinger negotiated the petrodollar. So we're all international. Basically, Saudi Arabia would only accept dollars for their export of oil. And this, in effect, made the dollar the world's reserve currency at the time. And this allowed the U.S. government, again, to tap a huge source of credit, because all those petrodollars would come back to New York banks. And also they'd capitalize the banks and also buy up treasuries. And at the same time, we'd sell Saudi Arabia a bunch of weaponry they can't use. Yeah, so this deal set up. But what this did do is it created an artificially, a strong dollar, which means that imports were cheap and our exports were unusually expensive. Well, that's going to cause deindustrialization, the macroeconomic effect. And, you know, obviously the people making these decisions know this. It's not like, you know, they can't see a little further down the road, but it seemed to be that seemed to be their objective, to bring out this equalization, which was kind of foreseen with the creation of the Trilateral Commission in the 1970s that Zbigniew Brzezinski was, well, I guess, the first chairman of, that David Rockefeller created. So, the people that run the international bankers, the Western bankers, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, they think in these terms of altering the geographics of production. And of course, when you think in these broad terms, what that really means is you're going to be affecting policies in various countries, whether it's promoting a civil war somewhere, a revolution somewhere, or collapsing a currency somewhere, like George Soros does. Of course, Soros is an agent of the Rothschilds. But you can, so you have these games being played with billions of people's lives and disrupting their life to achieve your objective, which is some sort of, you know, periodic global resetting, the changing of the board, so to speak, switching around the pieces of the chessboard, as Zbigniew Brzezinski like to refer to the world as a chessboard. But it's very messy in reality, though. And so when we're confronted with some of these events like COVID-19 or 9/11, is these events are basically stage events as cover for this repositioning that they're constantly seeking to do, with their control of the financial system.
Well, the Chinese have little faith in their currency, which is also part of the problem, which also fuels the dollar and its, mm-hmm. speculation and how, again, they have a lot of confidence in U.S. dollar. So if they're able to move their money out of China and into the United States or countries that trade in U.S. currencies, they do it. They leave. Like they'll do anything it takes to get around capital controls in China to move it abroad. But the a big problem what I see is that between the United States and China is China has confidence in their nation. They believe in their leader. They think Jay is a good representative for the Chinese people. Recently, they lifted term limits so he can pretty much run indefinitely. That's a big sign that they really do have confidence in their leader. Where in the United States, we're hampering ourselves and have these left fanatics run around and burn cities down. How much China is behind that is questionable. I would like to get do a little bit research and see how much of a Chinese influence there is in the West. We already know that China students join the Confucius Center in our universities. The Confucius Center receives dollars from the CCP, and you're not allowed to criticize. When you're in the program, you're not allowed to criticize the Chinese government. And these are inside our universities. And because the native populace can't afford, you know, $60,000 to $120,000 in student debt, and you can't write that off, can't declare bankruptcy on it, we bring more and more Chinese students here. And once they're here, they buy a property, and then they join the Confucius Center, where they believe in Mao thought, where they get taught in Mao thought. So these are very dangerous aspects of globalization. We've somewhat overplayed our hand, allowing so many foreigners into the United States, and we're kind of seeing that now, and we're sort of reaping what we sow. And as far as the West Coast goes, you know, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, where the native population is a little more deracinated, kind of this, you know, feel good hippie, you know, laid back attitude about the world at large versus the East Coast. These type of things where you have leftist organizations take a footing, and perhaps there might be some type of Chinese influence behind that.
Well, yeah, you have a situation where the deracination is important because you have a native population which doesn't believe in things like ethnic pride or cultural pride. It's all, you know, I'm okay, you're okay. And when they're confronted with an ethnic group which doesn't feel that way, they're going to be brushed aside.
Well, they put up Chinese flag in Vancouver recently. Mm-hmm. There was a huge celebration, I think, for the Chinese New Year maybe a year or two ago. And I didn't really see much of an outcry from the native population of Vancouver. And Vancouver has just become a vassal state to Beijing. So these are, again, this is a very dangerous concept. And when you start talking about insurrection and separatist movements on the West Coast, which has been hinted by the Democrats, I think there's going to be a massive power vacuum, and maybe China will be the person that fills that vacuum, because China doesn't have that much arable land anymore because of the overdevelopment. Most of the cities that have been developed in China are on lands that were for agricultural use. There's a reason why there's a town in that specific region in China. It was because it was a paddy field, it was a farm, it was, you know, for livestock and such. The CCP, the past 20, 30 years, decided, you know what, we're just going to develop it into this mega city. Well, now you don't have a place to grow crops anymore. So now China's looking outwards in Southeast Asia and even parts of the United States where we supply soybean oil. Smithfield Farms is receiving subsidies from the taxpayer, whereas Smithfield Farms is owned by China now. You have Yum Brand Group, which is Taco Bell, KFC, is now owned by China. So this is what we're seeing. And, you know, when you have a predominant stakeholder that's a foreign entity inside the United States, they can dictate policies on what direction you're going to go. Even going back to Smithfield Farms, excuse me, they decided, oh, we have to shut down the factory, the pork factory, because of COVID. China's saying shut down the factory. So they're telling American workers in the factory, you can't go to work now. You can't provide food for your own people.
Yeah, and so, yeah, to what extent is that a response to a genuine threat, or is there something else going on there, something else at play? It's a way, also a way that ultimately that China can recoup a lot of the debt that they own, because they're sitting on all these treasuries, right? And then they're watching the U.S. government just run up the debt, which devalues the value of their portfolios, and they can get it back in terms of property and also shifting food production. You export it back to those areas, and then if you, again, that can be done under cover of a pandemic and a lockdown, and you seize those assets. There's been some suggestion that that's what's happening in Australia.
Absolutely. I can lockdowns. Definitely see that being part of it.
Now, you mentioned this real estate program in this EB5?
The EB5 visa program. I call it the lucky China visa program.
You have a situation with the real estate market in the United States where it's been pumped up by foreign capital, right? Over.
Recently, right in the midst of the lockdown, Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham wanted to change the EB5 visa program to allow more Chinese into the United States, and lowered the amount of money needed to directly invest into the United States. So while we have this rhetoric going on that we're supposed to hate China and, you know, the China virus and what have you, you have both Democrat and Republicans trying to bring more Chinese more into the country. So it's kind of strange that we were doing this, like, wait a second. I thought China was the enemy and COVID and what have you, and you want to bring more in. Basically, with the EB-5 visa, it goes directly into real estate development. And once they receive the visa, the United States government, cities and states set policy on how you're going to spend and what you're going to build. And what they have to build is something like that's coming out of the doctrines of Agenda 21 and sustainable communities, walkability, smart growth. When we say Agenda 21, I don't like to use the word Agenda 21 because it kind of when they compartmentalize it in their mind that, oh, it's just a conspiracy. And you can't use that term. You use walkability, smart cities, smart growth, master plan, sustainable communities and sustainable development. And when you see it in your local paper, they're building bicycle paths, there's a new master plan for your local village or whatever it might be, that's usually a footing and a sign that you have some type of program that's implementing this UN idea.
Okay, so then you have this coordination, or how this, I guess you could say, these plans are intersecting. We have the direction of Chinese investment that is also promoting the Agenda 21 program, which, again, you can identify by various jargon terms like sustainability, master planning, these things. But Agenda 21 itself grew out of the Rio Treaty in 1992, the Rio Summit, which was based on a convention in 1987, which Maurice Strong oversaw. And, of course, Maurice Strong was this billionaire who actually escaped to China from Canada. He was a billionaire. But I think he got caught up in the oil for food scandal or something. But he was a Rockefeller lackey. But he was a big advocate of sustainability, of the Great Reset, if you will. He talked about how, you know, the middle class lifestyle of the West can only be maintained. Things like, you know, daily or common meat consumption, air conditioning, the suburban home. These things were no longer sustainable. And also, he talked about shutting down the industry of the West to save the environment. And lo and behold, you know, that's done with COVID-19. With sustainability, you get a program. I'm sorry, with Agenda 21. You get a program which appears to be implemented at the local level, but really it's a top-down approach. It's just implemented at the local level. This is done through the International Council of... ICLEI. It's the International Council of Local Environmental Initiatives. I think they've changed their name recently because people caught on to it. There's a lot of activism against the 21, so they changed the name and still implement the program. But this gives the false impression that it's being planned locally, but it's not. It's a top-down approach. And this was I think Clinton was the one that created the Presidential Commission on Sustainability, following up President Bush's agreements in the Rio Summit 1992. But this has been carried out through various executive orders through the federal and state governments, and it's trickled down into the local governments. And you've had the various local governments now have been co-opted by this. The governments have been taken over, if you will, by these various agents of this initiative, which is sustainability, which you now, if you walk around your neighborhood or your city, you see the stacked housing being built. It all looks very the same. There's commercial shops underneath it. There might be like a big chain store, like a Harris Teeter or something. And above it, you have the stack housing, which is the plan for, I guess, how they want people to live. And they're slow. And you get into this in your article. I'll let you expand on it. How, by subsidizing large corporations, these developments with tax deferments, tax breaks, they put a higher tax burden on the residents there, which make those properties no longer sustainable. So they sell out, and this leads to ultimately will lead to people moving into the stack housing as suburban as the suburban housing stock dries up because of the economic conditions that have been manipulated to make those things no longer sustainable, if you will.
Yeah, it's a bit of like a reverse of Slaughter of the Cities. Well, we deracinated them, moving them into the houses. Now we're going to stack and pack them once they've lost their ethnic identity. Mm-hmm. So with the breakup of the family unit, you're not having two or three children anymore. What do you need a 2,000 or 3,000 square foot home? If you're in your 30s, not married, no children, you can just be a renter in these downtown cores. Even now, the price of cars, again, Trump mentioned it last night in the debate. Cars are now $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Cash for clunkers, for example, was part of Agenda 21,
yes.
Where you've taken used cars out of circulation. So now used car prices have doubled. I was recently looking for a used car, and I just couldn't believe what the price is, what they were asking. So again, to have a car, you're going into debt. Well, you know what? Forget the car. You know, millennials are already strapped with college debt. They don't have good job prospects. So why not just be a renter? You can have a shared bicycle, or as I like to call it, sodomite on a bike, where part of the grant programs include LGBT housing, 55 and older LGBT housing, for example, which I've seen in certain cities on the East Coast, where, okay, there's a bar for air quote straight people. Now we're just going to dump a whole bunch of homosexuals on top of you, which, you know, drives straight men away. And, you know, this party culture, live today to hell with tomorrow, where young people just getting drunk and you know, on 300% markup beers or what have you. So this kind of all coincides with the whole consumption boutique economy.
Yeah, this is
subscription-based economy.
This is the gay disco, as Michael Jones talks about.
Absolutely, yeah. 100%. The gay disco is real, and it's part of Agenda 21.
And this was the deal in 1975 in Death Valley with Michel Foucault. And the oligarchs would make him a celebrity, an academic celebrity. And there's just to redefine the left. And this is the left's descent into pure global homerism, and how they abandoned the traditional claims of high wages and job protection for the working class.
Right. So what you have is a person who's 25 or 30 years old working in a coffee shop and getting paid minimum wage. And, hey, look, you can just rent upstairs. And the rents are usually very high, costing maybe 50 to 60% of that person's income. And then the whole affordable housing aspect of things is where the people that are paying market rate are subsidizing the people that qualify for affordable housing. So there's socialism baked into the housing programs. In addition to that, the person that's developing these Agenda 21 apartments, they receive massive tax breaks that are stretched out for 15, 20 years. And again, going back to the single family home has to basically take up the slack that commercial districts used to be paying a good portion of the tax base for local communities, because commercial property tends to pay more real estate taxes than single family housing. Mm-hmm. So once you've decimated a whole city, because of the outsourcing of jobs and the over financialization and, again, there's no base anymore because you can't afford to have a small business anymore. That's basically what happens. Okay, we'll knock it down and we'll give you a huge tax break for X amount of years. And you can just basically you build these apartments, and then that person has enough equity now where they can start building more and more of these type of projects across the region. Also, you'll start hearing key phrases from governors and politicians where they don't address towns anymore or counties anymore. They say regions. Well, that's because they're trying to change the vernacular and get you kind of adopting this type of wording where counties don't really have that much say. It's regions that have a say. So you'll start seeing this blending of counties and states, and they'll start calling them as I said, regions.
Yeah, regional governance is a big part. And they call it governance. Not government, but governance is a big part of Agenda 21. Of course, not these the people who are governing are not accountable. they're not elected.
Right, they're unelected officials. Yeah.
And it's interesting because just recently, Gavin Newsom announced that California was going to be carbon-free cars. Next 10 years or 15 years, he's going to get rid of automobiles that use gasoline. They're trying to make it all electrical.
And oh, course, that's good. While they don't have power.
Right, exactly. So you can have coal-fired, cars that charge up on plants that are coal-fired or something. But yeah, exactly. They haven't maintained the infrastructure. But but the electrical cars are much more expensive. And I guess this goes to the higher cost of cars and getting destroying the used car market or with the cash for clunkers 10 years ago. I remember that. But also, they're all part of economic stimulus and saving saving General Motors. But the big part of this, again, as you mentioned, is you're changing people's habits, taste, and culture. And that is the big global homo push that's being promoted by corporations and government. People are amazed that, why do you have a drag queen story hour in libraries? And why is every corporation supporting LGBTQ as if it's just, if this were business, why would they be supporting interest in such a tiny part of the market? Well, they're promoting this culture because as the people are deracinated and corrupted morally and sexually, they're not going to have the normal healthy aspirations of family life. So that, like you mentioned, the small apartment is suitable for them because they don't have any ideas of raising kids, having a family. We need open spaces and yards and these things. At the same time, this urban population is very easy to control than, say, maybe an ex-urban or suburban population.
Well, with the COVID, what I started noticing was the more use of surveillance and unmanned vehicles and drones. There was Elizabeth, New Jersey. They had drones sort of flying around, spying on people's backyards, checking in alleyways, and seeing if there's any type of social gathering. In Baltimore, they are running a pilot program for 40 hours a week where they're flying airplanes around to basically some type of minority report where they're going to stop crime before it happens. It's just a pilot program, nothing to worry about. And also Connecticut tried doing the same thing Elizabeth, New Jersey was doing. The town slips my mind, but they luckily the town was small enough that the people gathered and says we're not doing this. And most of these drones are coming from China, where they already have these type of things, where it's already a massive surveillance state. So when you able to move everyone into these type of, 1 to 2 year, 2-tier cities, it's much easier to monitor them. And when you're not in a car and you're walking, it's again, much more easier to basically spy on you. What you'll start seeing is a lot of apartments will start, having these, COVID rules. Well, you have to wear a mask when you're in the common area, maybe even a temperature sensor before you enter the building. This is kind of where we're leading to as a society if we're losing our rights as a homeowner or property owner. So
under those restrictions, you simply can't exercise your right to assembly. You can't compare notes, if you will, meet in the pub and talk about politics and discuss these things. You're all isolated, you're atomized, which is perfect for the oligarchs. It's the type of society they want. At the same time, the public, as I mentioned before, the public health concern is a pretext for constant 24/7 monitoring. And that's self-evident now. That's what they're calling for with contract tracing. It's ridiculous. Tracing. Also,
with Agenda 21 and the buildings that they are erecting, first of all, they're erecting them quicker. As of late, is if anyone noticed that you're going to see there's a lot more development going on as far as housing, and they're kind of in a rush to build them as fast as possible because there is a housing crunch and there is a housing crisis. But what you'll see is that the pitchback and setbacks of the buildings, there's no alleyways, there's no balconies, everything's kind of, it's basically a wall So the architecture is built for a surveillance state.
Yeah, the architecture will guide people how to behave. And you know, architects have known that for years.
Even with now with COVID, with people eating outdoors, you're no longer inside. You're outside where there's a street camera. Mm-hmm. So, and also if we take a look around the world, well, who dines outside? The third world dines outside.
Yes. Yeah. And again, all this over what?
Yeah, I know.
You know.
Crazy.
The people put up with this. It's amazing that they've put up with it. But it's amazing what you can do, you know, with modern communication and brainwashing people. With the media, people just listen to the box, you know. What they've done is that now you have. I mean, if you change the rules and you start subsidizing this type of development. And you, again, no longer, and it's gradual, then all of a sudden it's sudden. Pretty soon, your housing development, your suburban development, your house won't be sustainable because it won't have the tax base to support the infrastructure. And they'll say, sorry, we can no longer support, you know, the gas lines, the water mains. We got to move you in. It's just no longer viable. Sorry, just the way
it is. That is for people that live in rural areas. Now, obviously, a lot of people who identify as the alt-right, dissident right, they think this is the greatest thing ever, that the cities are collapsing. And they want to move to urban areas, Montana, North Dakota, mm-hmm. parts of the South, like rural parts of Georgia. The Agenda 21 already factored all those things in. So if you live in the exo-suburbs or you live in rural areas, what they'll do is they'll start cutting back services to those areas. So if you need groceries, now the Walmart or the supermarket is now 20 miles away or 30 miles away. So it makes it impractical for you to live out in these areas. They'll cut back on fiber optics, you know, your internet connections, even electricity. They'll start cutting back on those type of things. What they'll do is they'll start baking in tax credits for you to cut to reduce power. So if you don't use power at a certain hour or at night or during the day, it depends on the bureaucracy and what they dictate. But they'll start giving you incentives not to use power at a certain time of day, and they'll incentivize you to move to a city because there's not much job growth in the rural area unless you're a farmer. I think it was in Oregon where there was that huge protest. You can fill me in. I forgot what it was about and who was the people at play. But it had to do with a massive land grab where it was the Bureau of Land Management over, I think, a brush fire where the person lights a fire to kill off a certain crop or whatever. And the fire got onto federal lands. And they decided, you know, we're just going to, you know, try to confiscate eminent domain and take your property away because you set a fire and it went to federal lands. These are the type of things that you'll see if you live out in these rural areas. And part of the deindustrialization is they dump fentanyl, OxyContin, and will put a casino in an area that's already impoverished. And I've seen that in my travels across the United States. I'm like, why is there a casino in West Virginia? These people are already really poor, and they obviously have an opiate problem epidemic. So why would you do that to this society? You know, dump more vices on them. Basically, you know, brain drain the native population of these regions where people that are intelligent wind up moving to the city, and the people that are left behind are addicted to fentanyl and gambling.
Yeah, I guess the casinos are there to launder the money that's made by the drugs they sell, and the recycle. You know, yeah, it's interesting. It was in Pennsylvania, a former Bethlehem Steel plant was converted into a Sheldon Adelson casino in Pennsylvania. And they have also have one. In Cincinnati, they used to be in Newport, and I think this guy owns Payday Loan Company or something, open up a casino there. And so this used to be considered a vice, was restricted, and you could go to Las Vegas, then New Jersey, you know, but now they've opened up all over the place. And, you know, and they always say this is going to revitalize the local economy and all that, But all it does is suck what little money there is left out of the economy and introduce more vice into it, you know.
Well, the construction unions love these type of projects. They love Agenda 21 because they're in it for the short term. Mm-hmm. So when you go to a local town meeting over one of these projects, there's always a representative from the unions there saying how this is good for us. We need the jobs. We need the growth. You know, this is good for unions. If you're a blue-collar working guy, you're not going to say no to an Agenda 21-style apartment. So they don't realize that you're supplying the bricks to your own prison cell, basically, in a sense. The same thing goes for the casinos. And going back to the casinos, who loves them? Well, the Chinese love them. So, you know, and they bring their money over. It's called smurfing, and they kind of wash the money through casinos. In Vancouver, for example, which is – you know, Vancouver model, there are 13 casinos in that city alone. That's, you know, that city doesn't really call for that many casinos, but sure enough, it's just another way for them to launder money and wash it.
Yeah, yeah, that's, and of course, our president, casino owner, right? Or used to be.
Former
casino owner. And that he bought up was a former Lansky operation.
Yes, yes it was. You're correct.
Resorts International. And that ties in the CIA and their operations back in the 60s and 70s in laundering the cocaine money, heroin and cocaine money. So what you have here is you have the destruction again of the middle class lifestyle, the deindustrialization of the United States. At the same time, you have the broad cultural agenda, which is global homo. This produces this sort of deracinated lost generation that has no healthy aspirations, and nor do they have any real identity to coalesce and fight back, because they've been atomized. And this, you mentioned, you know, your generation has been particularly targeted here, because with saddled with debt, they have no real job prospects, with COVID-19,
not having sex.
Well, that's another thing is if you look at the not just the lockdown and social distancing, but just the whole, cultural agenda of the past 30, 40 years, with feminism, global homo, it's really not conducive to procreation and family formation, is it?
Well, the more the members of society come to grips with the magnitude of the decline, the sadder the decline becomes. So a lot of people my age, I'm 32, by the way, I'm maybe perhaps the youngest person that's been on Our Interesting Times. But what I see is that the older generations, the boomers, they seem to really get a kick out of throwing dirt on young people's face. And the COVID lockdown really coincides with the boomer, because they would be the ones most susceptible to dying of COVID. So they've basically just thrown their children's future right into the gutter. Really enjoying watching the stock market rise and seeing their property values climb when there's 50 million people out of work. I found it very fascinating and a bit sad, where most wealthy people, and again, boomers, driving their boats, waving Trump flags and American flags, when most of the people that are protesting or riding have probably never even been on a boat, let alone ever own a boat. You know, a boat, it stands for a bust out another thousand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it costs hundreds of dollars to drive these things on a weekend, when a whole generation's being left out of the property class. So a lot of these people don't seem to realize what it is you're doing is, you know, really pissing off young people. I just couldn't believe it. You know, waving an American flag and waving a Trump flag, it doesn't really accomplish anything. One, BlackRock is making tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars by the month and buying up single-family homes. Yet there's no outcry about that. They kind of just you know, scoff at young people when, you know, my generation kind of was asking for some form of guidance. And the usual mantra I got from the boomer was, you'll figure it out. Don't worry. It'll be fine. So I'm like, okay, well, this 18-year-old girl is obviously not really all that interested in forming some type of bond with the opposite sex. She seems to be more interested in avocado toast and doggies. So I, you know, it's quite fascinating and interesting to see this generation kind of just let go of the steering wheel and let it ride right into the sunset, because the people are benefiting from this in the United States happen to be mostly wealthy people above the age of 55.
Yeah, it's a generational thing, but they're not passing anything down, and they don't seem too concerned with posterity and the successive generations, which in the past, there's always a linkage there. There's always three generations that were tied together. There was the elder, the middle-aged, and the young, and they all interacted with each other, and so they all knew they had an interest in each other. That changed in the 1950s and 60s with the development of the youth culture. So I think we're seeing a culmination of decades of social engineering through the manipulation of the culture, also the economy, the macroeconomic effects of the economy, the explosion of debt, and the pump and dump of the economy. And now you have the evaporation of jobs. The baby boomers don't understand this because in their generation, you just went to college, you worked hard, and you were rewarded. It isn't quite that simple right now, because there simply aren't the jobs out there. And also just that, again, you mentioned just the cost, you know, in the 1970s and 80s, someone just getting a job could buy a VW Beetle for $800 and get to work. And now a reliable transportation costs, what, north of $25,000, $30,000.
Well, now you rent a bike.
Yeah, a revolution of declining expectations. Right. And because what country did you see a lot of people ride bikes?
Right, again, it's the developing world, China, exactly, 100%. And the funny part is that the bike, the community bike, is owned by a bank. At least it's the case in the United States, where it's not, it doesn't say State of New York or the town of so-and-so. It says Citibank. It says Chase Manhattan, provided by Citibank, provided by Chase Manhattan.
Yeah.
What's going on here? But it's funny. It's funny because a lot of the immigrants don't adhere to any of these type of social engineering concepts. When Gavin Newsom says, okay, we're going carbon free by 2035, I really don't think the Mexican migrant is going to be okay with sharing a bicycle. I can't see how these things are going to be panning out, especially when the white stock continues to dwindle.
Yeah, I'm thinking of that song, Lowrider, 1970s. It's a cultural difference there. I see a lot of that. Just there's not a lot of understanding or empathy, and you've had this the millennials will disparage the boomers disparage the millennials, and none of them are taking on or addressing the real enemy. You mentioned like BlackRock, where the millennial or the Zoomer isn't going to be most of them aren't aware. All they know is something is wrong, and they're angry. And they may protest or get involved in Antifa or something that the oligarchs actually want, because they want the social unrest and strife to divide and conquer. But they're not going to identify their victim. You know, I mean, the people who are attacking them as necessarily BlackRock, the debt. But the boomer will say, "Why don't you just go out and get a job?" You know,
right?
You want you pay your debt. Well, the problem is debt's a weapon. I mean, this is why college is considered a predatory lending operation. And with debt and manipulation of the currency, you can, especially when you create the money out of thin air and you loan it out. You know, and then in the meantime, you're getting control of real resources and assets, like BlackRock buying up real property on money that's concocted out of thin air for them on their benefit. You know, like good example, this recent bailout, this $6 trillion bailout of Wall Street that occurred under the cover of the pandemic. Well, who's the big beneficiary? It's BlackRock. They're administering it. they're getting access to all that capital, and whoever's in their Rolodexes, they're going to be out there buying up the properties that become distressed because they're foreclosed upon. And you mentioned in the article how banks, this has been the case for 10 years, they're sitting on a lot of vacant properties, not reporting them because they don't want those to become liabilities. If they're not, although they're empty and they're not producing any income, that they don't list them as being foreclosed upon because they want it to be an asset on their books, not a liability. But this, at the same time, keeps the housing stock artificially tight, which raises the price of housing. At the same time, makes people have to borrow more to buy housing. And so it's higher than
ever.
Yeah.
The values of houses right now. How on earth is that possible when you have over 50 million people out of work?
It's the alchemy of finances, George Soros says. You know, that's what's happening. But you would think that the depressed housing stock, there's an equilibrium there, right? What's the cure for that? Well, obviously, housing at some point was overinflated, and those who took the bet and tried to profit off it should pay the price and take a haircut, either take a loss, and those who didn't should be able to come in and buy those houses, get in access to those houses for cheap. And that would be the younger people. And just think about that. If housing is cheap, buying a house is cheap. Yeah, there's some short-term pain associated with that as the economy reorients and recovers. But at the tail end of that is you have low-cost housing, which benefits young people, makes them more likely to get married and have children, and society starts to develop again. But that's not what they want, though.
No, they got to bring more Chinese money in to buy up the house.
Yes, or bring in more people from the third world.
Absolutely.
So you can have 60,000 Somalis in Minnesota selling their votes for $10, which
The last thing the banks want is the house to go into foreclosure because they don't want to eat the cost.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to pay the common charges on a condo, and they definitely don't want to be paying the property tax. So if they can kick that can down the road further and further, at the same time, get more money through cheap dough that's being pumped into the stock market, so be it, because they're going to be waiting on the sidelines to buy up all these houses and buy them all up. Now, when the stock market crashed in March, most young people thought this was it. This was going to be our chance to buy in, and many of them decided to short the market. But obviously, it went back up and defied logics of economics. So many young people got crushed shorting the market, and there's obviously a huge jubilee with the older generation because they have Roth IRAs and 401k plans and what have you. So,
mm-hmm. Yep, they failed to understand that the stock market's the biggest casino. So, and it's rigged.
I wanted your take because this is something that's been baffling me for quite some time. Is China an actual security threat, or are we punishing China for not allowing the soft power to penetrate the Chinese mainland?
That's difficult because at the one time, China's been set up by the West to be what it is today. And so you have different factions within China, which are very, I think, pro-Western. And then you have the Chinese Communist Party, for better or for worse, sees itself as the defender of Chinese nationalism. And you have the Belt and Road Initiative. And you have the old conflict between the center power, the continental power versus the sea power, and that was the Masonic British Anglo the Masonic Anglo American Judeo Empire versus these continental powers, which would be Russia and China. And theoretically even Germany, but the whole, strategy of the 20th century was to get Germany and Russia to fight, and that was the Mackinder Doctrine, and they succeeded in that. And so I think you have almost like this constant pressure, because in all the sense in the world it makes for the Eurasian landmass to unify against the sea powers, but then you have the sea power, which is again the Anglo-American Zero Empire, trying to break that up and maintain dominance, and that's what you have right now is. I think what you saw with COVID and the subsequent lockdown is the attempt to extend the life of the dollar with the ultimate goal of transitioning out of the dollar, if not into another currency, but into a social credit system. Get out of currency, where it's all controlled. And that's why you see this big push for 5G, you see this big push for complete technocratic control under the guise of public health, of course. So they can impose this China style social credit system globally. And this is why Bill Gates talking about, you know, putting up so many more satellites and this big push for 5G, which from what I understand is has been actually its extension or construction has been ramped up during the lockdown. I've heard anecdotal stories about people involved in communications and putting down cables. So they're busier than ever putting down 5G cables everywhere and towers everywhere.
Well, yeah. Why is it so important for a rural person in North Korea to have a good Wi-Fi connection?
Yes. And so to what extent we're punishing China? China's on. It's funny because this whole thing came out of China, right? And then the whole narrative of the lockdown came out of China. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. I mean, they told they locked down 50 million. I don't know. They could say that. I didn't see it anywhere. And they claim the virus came out of China. I don't know.
What's it, when you say it comes out of a wet market?
Ooh, yeah, wet market. Yeah.
Airy.
And now, well, these wet markets are traditional ways of people getting food, by the way. I know it may offend Western sensibilities, but at least at a wet market, you know what you're buying. They're all wet markets, but whenever you go to, if you're buying livestock there, it's going to be a wet market. So you have these terms, right? And the idea that jump from a bat to something else, and there's no proof of that, you know. But it's the same thing they did with the, 12 years ago, with the, no, it wasn't the SARS, it was the bird flu, how they, mm-hmm. It was a pretext for shutting down local markets. And the big beneficiary for poultry, the big beneficiary were the big poultry combines. So you're shutting. And so you have the same pattern where whether it's a foot and mouth disease, or it's the mad cow disease, or it's the bird flu, is you have the destruction of small independent agriculture, and the big combines are there to take up the slack. And you saw, of course, we've seen that with COVID-19, with the destruction of small businesses, been devastated by the lockdown, with the beneficiaries being Walmart, you know, and Target, and fast food operations, chain operations that are all corporately owned by, you know, probably by a handful of individuals. So you see that pattern. And then when you talk about, you know, what's going to happen in rural America, is if rural America or semi-rural America no longer has small businesses, they're completely dependent on these large corporations for their services.
Yeah, Monsanto is a big benefactor.
Mm-hmm. And look what's happened in New York. I think 100,000 businesses were destroyed in New York.
Yeah, something like that.
Now, why would, you know, again, why would de Blasio preside over the destruction of a city? He's not just stupid. He may be that. But I think he's intentionally destroying cities like New York so they can be revitalized maybe as a smart city. Or you can dump.
That's exactly what I think is going to happen. When I say that to people, they think I'm completely nuts. I go, they're going to do something with all these commercial buildings. Make no mistake about it. Mm-hmm. It could be like an eco city, and the people that work inside this eco city are receiving some type of UBI. They are obsessed with vertical farms. Make no mistake that the Green New Deal is real. It's in California and it's in New York. So when people laugh about it and think it's crazy, it's already it's being implemented on the ground level, mm-hmm. whether you're aware of it or not. They make it very hard for you to sell your property. You have to jump through hoops if your house is out of compliance or your apartment's out of compliance. But what I have noticed with the media, and again this rhetoric about China, is that the media seems to be obsessed on what China is doing over there, like the Uyghurs and the Hong Kong protest. I think the Hong Kong protest is again, it's something. There's obviously, foundations and NGOs that have been instigating that. We also had the referendum in Taiwan, where 70% of the Taiwanese said no to gay marriage. And the Supreme Court of Taiwan said, no, we're going to go ahead and roll with this.
Yeah, they're just like America.
Right, but Taiwan is but Taiwan is protected by the United States. If mainland China were to invade Taiwan, it's a declaration of war on us. So basically the West punked China, saying we're going to roll with this anyway and you can't do anything about it, because if you come here, it's an automatic declaration of war on the United States. And it seems that there's a bit of a cognitive dissonance where, oh, look, they eat dogs and they have wet markets. Well, that's their culture. That's what they do. You know, they're not going to, you know, prance around with doggies in the street and give it, you know, frozen vegan treats like we do in the United States. So this also, where I'm getting at is, we also had Zuckerberg marry a very unattractive Chinese woman. And Zuckerberg went to Xi Jinping and asked him, will you name our baby? And Xi Jinping said, no, I'm not. So once Xi Jinping rejected this kind of this intermarriage, you know, between powerful Jewish billionaires and a Chinese woman, it became a mantra that China is a threat and China's the enemy. And we already know Google's been trying to kind of a panter to the CCP, showing them all these different technologies on how we can spy on your citizens. Facebook, obviously. And then there's the ongoing feud with TikTok. There was the cell phone company, Huawei. There was a huge scandal around that. So it's interesting, because I feel like perhaps the people that rule the United States overplayed their hand when it came to China. And part of the reason why they pumped the stock market up is because they didn't want Chinese buying us out from underneath it.
And it's kind of like it's a monster they created. Now they're trying to control it, which is I can see that, because the world's complex. When you play these games, you know, the world isn't a chessboard, and people aren't just static pieces on the board. They're dynamic, and so you get situations that you didn't foresee, or you have to improvise. You know, like I don't know, a good example is someone like Adolf Hitler. you know, or even Stalin. Some people say Stalin went off script. But this doesn't say these are good people, or they're the good guys. The world doesn't really function that way. It's bit more complex. It's usually the bad guys in history aren't as bad as they say they are, and the good guys aren't as good as they say they are, and they meet in the middle somewhere. because it's the bigger game that's being played. It's hard to parse and understand, because I think a bigger game is being played, and that's clear. I think it's clear that they have some sort of neo-feudal objective or plan Murray Strong said it, and and of course the Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum is saying it. It's a great global reset, and the COVID-19 has presented us an opportunity that we should not pass up. Never let a good crisis go to waste. So they're admitting that they're using it as an opportunity. I think the whole plan was hatched at the World Economic Forum the year before. I think this is, and you know, obviously the idea of creating a global feudal order dates back as far back as the 1880s, you know, with the Fabians, you know, and H.G. Wells and what he called, you know, the open conspiracy. And now we have a situation where the technology has enabled them now to achieve their objectives. They've been working on it gradually over the years. Now they see it with their technology, that perhaps this is the time that they can really go full bore on it and really accelerate the operation. I think the COVID-19 plandemic was an acceleration of it. And that's the best.
Yeah, I think they got tired. They got tired of talking about it again, going back to Thunderbird. And you know, the problem with Sustainable Development and Agenda 21 is it's actually on the smallest scale is corruption, and corruption really wreaks havoc on the grand plan. So if you have bribes and you know, you don't adhere to certain doctrines that are in the zoning code, zones and codes and the bylaws of a certain village, it becomes more and more difficult to implement these things. So I believe that they grew tired. I think also the ruling class is in their twilight. I mean, George Soros is, what, like 95? Kissinger is also in his 90s, and they've realized that they're immortal and they want to roll these plans out really see these things come to fruition.
Yeah, the agenda chrome isn't having quite the punch that it used to have. Yeah, I mean, the scandals, you read about like these bike sharing programs, the briberies that have taken place, how each bike is like $10,000 or something.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know, but with these bike things, then they put it on bike lanes on roads, make driving less convenient. So this is, again, they're marginalizing automobiles and these things, and you know, and transportation has always been associated with social engineering,
Well, just before we end it, they are it looks like the local New York City MTA and the railroads are planning on laying mass layoffs because no one is using them. Mm-hmm. And once that gets rolled out, where they start laying off, and the New York City subway system's in total disarray, going back to Sandy Hook, where they decided to flip the switches on when everything was under salt water. This could also usher in this whole idea of speed trains and, you know,
yes,
you
yeah.
know, these type of concepts, you know.
Well, this is what do you call it? Disaster capitalism. Mm-hmm. On steroids, it's obvious. I mean, it's what they're doing there, and so this becomes a pretext. And again, why would you shut down all these? You know, why would you shut down this infrastructure over what? Over a fake, you know, a phony pandemic? Whether or not whatever reality there is to the virus, it's not the pandemic. It's not the Black Death, nor does it justify the harsh economic shutdown, which is killing far more many people than any supposed virus. And so, you can't square that circle. You can't justify it. But none of the politicians are addressing that. They just drone on and on with their rhetoric about, you know, testing and cases and, you know, and defeating.
Every single politician is okay with the lockdowns.
Yeah, it's a script. And it's almost like the model, again, would be Agenda 21 because it's an appearance of politicians reacting locally to real circumstances. When it's not, it's top down. And I think what's happened with the same way that Agenda 21 would infiltrate local and state governments with agents to implement the program, make it appear that it's being implemented locally and decisions are being made locally. Using jargons and the Delphi technique and the manipulation of language, neuro-linguistic programming. Well, the COVID-19 is the same thing. And you've had, a feckless White House, you know, apparently not having the power to protect our rights, even though there is something called the 14th Amendment, which they did pass or they imposed after the Civil War, which is supposed to protect our rights, and we're supposed to have the Bill of Rights is supposed to be applied to the states and these things. But now they can shut down churches, shut down businesses under the guise of an emergency and provide no scientific or empirical data for that. There's some lawsuits, I understand now, in Ohio that are trying to make them produce evidence for emergency before you can declare an emergency, which is common sense. You think you'd have to do that. But you've had the governors and mayors doing this. And I think the governors and mayors have been a part of this operation the same way that people were a part of Agenda 21 operation. And so this is why they all speak from the same script on this stuff. It's all been coordinated. And to me, it's obvious. You know, I don't know how you look at the observe things, what they're saying, what's really going on, and accept it to say that there's any validity to it at all, other than that it's a plan to shut down the economy and lower everyone's living standards and impoverish everybody. So at the other end of it, people are desperate for a reset, you know, so we can all go on UBI, social credit system. We no longer have our small businesses or independent operations. So we're all working for corporations or on some form of dole, which we can be controlled.
It sacked the motivation out of everybody. When the lockdown first hit during COVID, most people were like, oh, thank God, I can stay home for like a couple weeks
yes.
or 3 weeks, and then it started getting then it turned into a month, and then a month and a half, And then it became, you're not actually going back to your office. You can work from home in your pajamas and drink Spike seltzers underneath the table while your kids are in the background. And so a lot of people were quite okay with this being this actually happening, because most of the people, unfortunately, again, the poor don't have the means to be on a Zoom conference. The Mexican's not going to be Zooming. The construction worker's not going to be doing these type of things. And it's mostly people with some type of capital that are okay with the shutdown and working from home. So when that happens, you basically kill people's motivations and aspirations to go out and do, you know, to work hard. So you can definitely see UBI being rolled out relatively soon. And you can, and also, I know in New York State, and I think in California, they've given UBI. How do I say this? Like, if you receive $500, they've padded it with federal money, and you know, where you're now earning more money than you did when you're actually working, and that's continuing going forward.
But ultimately, the economy relies on people getting things done, producing things. You can't just write checks, and you know, so eventually, you're going to have run into shortages and inflation, monetary inflation, if you keep doing this. You know, which is,
well, they've definitely papered over the economy very well the past 6 months.
Yes, and it's amazing how they can keep it going. But I mean, at some point you realize that an economy is people going out and building things, producing things, trading, circulating, and you can't do that from from behind a computer screen, in front of a computer screen with a mouse, you know. And not to mention just the effects of people not going, people not going out and meeting, talking, discussing, just think about social life, the cultural events that aren't going to be happening. I don't know, weddings, ceremonies, funerals, going to church, are now told that they don't have to go to church or they can't go to church. And then we're told by the Supreme Court that's not a violation of the First Amendment's free exercise, because there's an emergency of which there's no evidence for.
You mean you can't receive the sacrament from your living room?
Yes. Well, like I said, and this is just a good example of people being bribed. The bishops acquiesced to that, and I think it's because they're bribed.
Well, they don't want to lose their 401k. What is it? Their foundation status? What is it? Not-for-profit status?
The tax-exempt status.
Yes, correct. They don't want to lose that.
Yeah,
it's quite fascinating, because when we see these things like TikTok and Zoom take off, both owned by China. There's other platforms you can use outside of Zoom. And when I try telling coworkers, you know, why don't we use Skype instead of Zoom? Why is it automatic we have to use Zoom because everyone else is using it? Mm-hmm. And many businesses don't have any plans on ever really returning back to the office. I had one good friend of mine ask his employer, you know, I would like to get out of the house. Is it okay if I utilize the office just to change up the scenery? And they told him outright, no, you can't, because of COVID.
So now, all that infrastructure and building, what are they going to do with that? Well,
it's a $100 trillion plan.
Yes, and again, no one stops to think that. Really, it's too dangerous to go out? But I go shopping every other day at a grocery store and packed in with people, just like you could go shopping, but you couldn't go to church, right? You know,
I got one for you. Why is there curfews? There's a curfew in the Dominican Republic right now. People are not allowed out after 9 p.m. I didn't know COVID liked to roam the city streets late at night. Same thing that's going on in North Carolina, curfews. You have curfews regarding, Black Lives Matter and Antifa. So this is a little bit strange, where we're kind of being acclimated to yes, things like a curfew.
Yeah. And, you know, again, this goes back to cite the reported, the CDC numbers, where the official number is a 99.76 survival rate. Since when is that a basis for shutting down the economy, imposing curfews, lockdowns, people not going to church, people not engaging in social intercourse. It's, to me, I mean, it's just, people accept this?
Well, it's an attack on the intangible and the more commodification of human beings. So now women have an OnlyFans, you know, these type of things where, okay, you, in order to talk to me, you have to deposit $5 into my bank account or whatever it might be. This is, you know, I don't want to say it's crazy, but I thought there was, again, laws against prostitution and such. Isn't OnlyFans a form of prostitution? But I guess because it's a social media platform, they're the pimp, so it's okay.
And you're allowed to do that, but you can't have a program on YouTube that addresses, revisionist accounts of history, certain events.
Well, that all coincided right when the lockdown happened. So now everyone's on the internet, everyone's listening to podcasts, everyone's on YouTube. They knew to just axe all that when they knew people were going to be sitting in front of a computer screen.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to me, again, this is amazing that something like this can be unleashed, rolled out, and still have like a good 80% of the public go, oh well. You know, it's above my pay grade to question it. That's the attitude I get a lot from a lot of people, you know.
And then And meanwhile, Gavin Newsom is signing executive orders, and the backdrop is trees on fire. Wow. And you're taking COVID mandates, memorandums from a Jewish transgender in Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's okay. We're going to listen to that person.
Yeah, that's the head of public health in Pennsylvania is a man pretending to be a woman. And the people around her have to call him her. And these are the people we're taking direction from. You know.
it's... Yeah. It's I don't say it's scary, but it's definitely clown-esque.
Clown Edward world.
Pennywise world.
Yeah. It's Pennywise world. It's more vicious than that. Yeah. It's something else. And again, we've been gradually led to this state. The dumbing down of America. We've had the baby boomers. They're the ones that decided to watch television, stop thinking. And you know, they did well, but they, you know, their children did less well, and now this Generation X, and now there's the millennials and the Zoomers, who are now sort of the lost children or the refugees of the culture wars the past 40-50 years in the West, and this was foreseen. I mean, this type of stuff. I mean, Planned Parenthood planned this out in the late 60s in Pennsylvania. They had a meeting there in the 60s, late 60s, that talked about promoting sexual degeneracy would lead to family breakup, which would produce higher rates of sexual dysfunction, like homosexuality. And then you get inherently the atomization and the alienization people feel, and they're just easier to rule over. And this is why it's promoted.
You know. Right, that's why they start to identify with things like Black Lives Matter and Antifa.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they don't have their traditions or whether it's their religion, so they seek redemption in progressive, so-called progressive politics and activism.
And now, mind you, Tim, these people, this generation, is just getting started. Because as the boomers reach their twilight, the next generation, again, is atomized to the point where they have no culture, they have no identity other than rap music and being a sodomite. So this is pretty scary. And AOC is a good example of what is to come with this next generation, or like a Jacob Fryer.
Yeah.
All these type of individuals.
Yeah, he shows up to beat Black Lives Matter in like skinny jeans and a baseball shirt.
Right, and they've already limited single-family housing in Minnesota. Maybe just St. Paul. I have to, again, look into that. But I already can tell you that Minnesota's already implemented the ending of the single-family zoning.
Hmm. And so there you go, yeah.
We're
coming up here, hour 38. So anything else to say?
No, I appreciate the time speaking to you. It was an absolute pleasure.
No, thank you for coming on the show. And so, where's the best place to follow your work?
Just type in MGTOW Chats on BitChute. Follow
Okay.
me there. I have a blog, and I'll be uploading some more work to the American Sun. So I'll just provide updates from there, and we'll call it a wrap. Thank you very
Yeah,
much.
go to the article. The article is at the American Sun. It's sorry, the title of it is China Real Estate. Is it Real Estate China and COVID? Yeah, China Real Estate and COVID-19. It was posted on the 10th of September of this year. So it kind of brings in all these apparently disparate things, but they're all kind of connected. And I don't think it's just because of its, things just sort of converging. I think this is all part of a big plan.
Yeah, the ghost cities in China tie right into Agenda 21, emptying the rural lands, pushing people into these mega cities. Just in the case of the United States, it takes a little bit more coercing.
Yeah, and there is a map. There's this Agenda 21 map with what they foresee as people will be removed, as the rewilding project, the sort of the neglect of some of the suburban or exurban or the rural areas, forcing people into the into the cities, creating the economic environment for this. So it may not seem immediately as being coercive, but if you control the economic system, you can through the manipulation of policies, staging wars, creating crises, COVID-19, wars of terror, whatever you want to think, you can manipulate the situation where people don't realize they're being coerced because you're denying them alternatives, choice in these
Nudge
things.
theory.
Yeah, nudge theory. Yeah, you can nudge, you can push it. It's almost like what you could do with, see, it's sort of like what you could do with weather control or something. That you could actually, you can get the herd just, by, I don't know, like with brush fires, and
Right.
that's what they're doing with humanity, with by changing the economic conditions, the social conditions through social engineering, global homo cultural agenda, literally shutting down. I mean, they've done this is the most crude way, shutting down an economy, and it's going, oh well, we had to do
Yeah,
it,
oh well. Good luck.
good luck, here's your $1,200 check. And so if you got it at all, so that's what's been done. And it's again, this is how you can well create the slave state, the global slave grid that they obviously that they speak openly about wanting to create. I mean, they brag about it. That's what Bill Gates is talking about,
It's all out in the open for you, especially when it comes to sustainable development. It
yeah.
it's all written, and you can read it for yourself. It's definitely not a conspiracy. I mean, I've been studying this for well over 10
Yeah.
years. I tried my best to address it to so many people, yet they believe that it was all not real. I don't know how else to describe it. Just
Yeah,
people just are still
as
get over it.
they're implementing it, they're saying it's not real. And then I mean, you a good example is something like the World Economic Forum Davos, the Davos set where they promote this, where they come out with this great reset plan. Just think about what that entails, okay? They're not going to be able to implement that through normal democratic or political process. They're going to have to wage covert psychological warfare, change the objective and conditions so people are sort of guided to accept it. And you do that through collapsing the economy, where they accept the new order because the old order has been destroyed and they're desperate. But they openly talk about doing this. If you just look at go to the video of the Great Reset, what they're talking about, resetting the globe, changing everything. And so, if that's a conspiracy theory, you're going to tell me that the World Economic Forum isn't consequential, that these people don't have power and the power to implement their policies. Fine. They're only the world's richest people meeting with politicians and people in media, and government and finance. So that's not consequential. Fine. I guess, but it's funny that that gets less coverage than, say, the NFL draft, So, okay, well, I'll let you go.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it
Thank
again.
you. I'll post this soon. I do. I'll send you the link.
Very well.
Good night then.
Good night.
Bye bye. Thank you.